Welcome back to the DFS Office Hours Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan, and this episode is a recording of an interview I did with Matt Hunter, the founder of SaberSim, streamed live on the SaberSim YouTube channel on February 23rd, 2022. We discuss how SaberSim's unique NASCAR simulations work, why simulations can provide such a big advantage in racing sports, and how to use SaberSim's powerful tools to build NASCAR DFS lineups. These strategy-focused interviews will come out at the start of new major sports seasons, as well as whenever we release a new or updated sport model, and I hope you enjoy. All right, what is up, everybody? Welcome back. Our team has been hard at work all year getting us ready for the start of the NASCAR season with our new NASCAR model. And as of last week with the Daytona 500, our full NASCAR simulations are live in the app. And to figure out exactly what a NASCAR simulation is and why it gives you such an edge in your NASCAR DFS lineups, I brought Matt onto the stream today to come and talk to me a little bit about how this all comes together. So we'll get right into this here in a second. But before we start, just wanted to mention that we always do these shows live for a reason, and that is to answer your guys' questions. So if you have questions, go ahead and pop them into the Office Hours channel in Slack or into YouTube chat here, and we'll get to everybody's questions. But I, you know, just want to jump right in and start here first by asking you, Matt, what is a simulation when we talk about this, right? I know we always say that we have these sims. What is the difference really between projecting NASCAR and simulating it?
Yeah. So a simulation can mean a lot of different things. So I'll start just by kind of explaining what a projection is. So generally, a projection is literally you're projecting the average, you know, fantasy points for each player. Usually, in most places, that means you're running some sort of regression model. You're essentially taking all these different factors, you're sticking them into a formula of sorts, and then you come up with the average projection. It doesn't come usually with ranges of outcomes or anything like that. It's just, this is the number that on average we expect the player to score, which works better in sports where it's a lot more consistent of what they would score, but really in any sport it doesn't work too well. So a simulation is essentially we're creating a range of outcomes for how we think this, in the case of NASCAR, how we think this race is going to happen. And so what we do is we will run a simulation of the race thousands of times. So mm-hmm. for NASCAR, I believe it's around 5,000 sims. Not sure about that, but something like that. It's, you know, thousands of simulations of this race. In each one, you know, one driver gets first, one driver gets second, and so on. We, you know, calculate the stats for each driver, the number of laps led, the fastest laps, and we're using their historical stats. We're using all this different data to kind of randomly essentially decide in each race how it happens. The end result is that we have for each driver all of these possible outcomes. And if you average those outcomes, you come up with the typical mean projection, the typical average projection. But that's just one number that's sort of the summary of all of these simulations, all of these runs of this race, of each one is really like a possible outcome of how this race could go.
Gotcha. So when we're thinking about the way that this all kind of fits together, what are the factors that we're thinking about when we're simulating these races? What are the inputs to the sim?
Yeah. So for the NASCAR sim, kind of unlike some of our other sports, we do lean fairly heavily on Vegas odds as a factor. And then the two aspects of it are there's the Vegas odds, which we really want to use because there are a lot of different factors that were, you know, specific to the track and specific to each racer that we don't necessarily want to stray too far from Vegas. That said, we're not just completely like relying on that. We have a projection model that kind of creates these projections that go into the sim, and that's based on all of this historical data. So we have years and years of historical data for every single race, both Cup and, you know, trucks in Xfinity. And so we have all of this lap by lap data that we kind of put into this model that sort of analyzes the data and comes up with these projections for each driver, for each course, for each, all these different factors that can go into a race. Mm-hmm. And then we take those sort of like context neutral projections and we stick them into the sim, combine that with, you know, the Vegas lines to make sure that, you know, okay, we're kind of somewhat matching what, you know, the probability of each driver winning and being top three and top five. And so what we come up with is something that sort of it takes into account all this historical data and our models. It's a very similar model that we use as a very similar framework as other sports in terms of kind of creating those context neutral projections that go into the sim, but really making sure that we're aligning for the most part with Vegas in the average output. But you know, what the value that you get out of that is that, you know, we're creating these average results that are pretty close to Vegas. And so, you know, they're going to be fairly good because the market is pretty efficient, even in sports like NASCAR, you know, it's going to be a fairly efficient market, but then you have these ranges of outcomes and these simulations where when you're building lineups, you can really take advantage of lineup construction using these sims of correlations of all this stuff that where the average outcome is accurate and you know, tested, but you know, you get really good exposures to different drivers and good construction of your lineups.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, I wanted to kind of pull up the app here real quickly just to show this. And so this is Daytona from last week. So we have the average projections and ownership. And I guess at first glance, the step one in the app will look kind of familiar to somebody that's maybe even used other NASCAR tools. But what we're talking about here really is when you pull up a driver and look at the distributions of his outcomes, you can see actually how much variance there is here, how much diversity there is in the range of outcomes. And I guess it kind of then goes to show how really meaningless, I guess, this average projection is, right? It's most common outcomes for this particular driver aren't even really centered around that. It's definitely not a normal distribution here. So while we have the app pulled up, you had mentioned that talking about exposures and the way this ends up coming into lineup construction, how do we use this data when somebody comes in and starts building lineups with SaberSim? What happens to the sims then?
Yeah, so the way that kind of just to explain how our builder works for those that are unfamiliar or just need a reminder. So the key here is this sim variance setting in the builder. So sim variance is on the surface, you might think it's sort of similar to randomness in other optimizers, but it's actually very, very different, especially for a sport like NASCAR. So sim variance is essentially determining how many simulations of the race we use in each lineup to determine how to build each lineup. So at starting with zero, if you had sim variance at zero, then each lineup is just using the average projections. Or in other words, it's using the average of all of the simulations of the race each time. So the first lineup will be the optimal based on the projections. The second will be the second most optimal and so on. If you have it somewhere in between, then each lineup will use some of the simulations. It'll basically will kind of randomly sample, you know, maybe 20 or 50 simulations of the race and average those. And so each lineup is going to be slightly different just based on kind of how the variance goes in that bin of simulations. Mm-hmm. But I think really the way to really take advantage of the builder and how this unique value of the builder for GPP lineups in NASCAR is to use a sim variance of 10, which is saying each lineup is only looking at one simulation of the race. So what that means is, you start your build we get to the first lineup and we go, okay, let's take one random sim of the race. So maybe in that simulation, Kyle Larson gets first and Hamlin gets second and so on. And so basically the lineup would be the optimal lineup for that simulation. So what that means is that each lineup, if you have a sim variance of 10, is going to be a possible optimal lineup from the sim. So like this is a viable lineup that could win it all, right? And so that's really valuable because one, we're creating, 500 to 1500 different lineups. And so, yeah, each one is sort of random, but then you can kind of sort down and filter down this pool and know that each of these lineups that you're getting is a lineup that could, take down a contest. And that's really what you need. And so that's the value of these sims is that we're kind of naturally doing what you might have to use groups and other sorts of rules in another optimizer to do. Where you're saying, okay, I want to make sure that each lineup is like a viable lineup where, maybe we have some guys from the back and some dominators and we need to make sure that they kind of, this works. And we're doing that for you because we simulate the games. Each lineup is a sim. So that's really how we're taking advantage of those sims and incorporating that into the builder.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think that's just like such an important point to really hammer home is that a traditional tool with average projections that we've already kind of seen here aren't really that useful. They're at the very least not really predictive of a driver having upside, right? A traditional tool that's optimizing for that is going to build lineups that perform well on average, but they don't really give you the lineups that have the potential for upside. On a race-to-race basis, how are we capturing the differences or the uniqueness of a particular track or the nuances of a particular race?
Right. So, we do know, obviously, the key here is like the starting positions of each driver, who's in the race. Mm-hmm. And, a huge part of the DraftKings and FanDuel scoring is the place differential. So the difference between, if you start 30th and get first, you're going to have a ton of points. So that's obviously a big factor that we're incorporating into the sims. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, the particular track. So like the size of the track really matters. Daytona is like the super speedway where there's a lot of lead changes. There's a lot of crashes and it's like a very specific type of race. So we're kind of incorporating that. And so depending on the race and, kind of the different factors of the track, we are changing, the amount of variance. Mm-hmm. And like how well each driver is going to do based on like, for Daytona, the starting position really doesn't matter that much. I mean, it matters for scoring, but it doesn't matter for like probability of winning as much as other races where it's a lot harder to pass and to, move up from back of the pack to front of the pack. So we're kind of incorporating all that stuff into the sim, and that really that's accounted for in the average predictions, but really accounted for in like the ranges of outcomes, the variance of projected points for each player.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, and you can see here, I know that the stack the back kind of thing is popular on these super speedway races, and for our Daytona projections here or sims really, we got those kinds of lineups that have those drivers that kind of upside without again doing anything really. We just built with sim variance 10, capturing those sims directly here. So I guess kind of going forward here, a question we always get on these streams is once people are getting familiar with kind of the basics of what's going on, how to start building lineups, what are some additional things that people can maybe spend a little bit of time researching on, ways that you can add some value to your particular process that maybe the model's not taking into account of, or maybe not taking into account of directly?
Yeah. So the model is obviously first, it's brand new and we aren't incorporating everything. So in terms of research that would help, we do account for the track type in terms of how track type will impact all drivers, but we don't look at each driver's course history on the track. So if you have a driver that's just like really good at a specific track, it will be accounted for in the Vegas odds most likely. And so we are in kind of baking that into the projections and the sims a bit in terms of how that is in the Vegas odds. But if you think that Vegas isn't doing enough there, mm-hmm. you know, you see someone that has like a really good history at a certain track, but isn't, you know, that's not their odds of winning, you know, on DraftKings Sportsbook isn't as high as you think. That's a place where you can kind of add some value there potentially. We don't account for pit crew skill. And then practice and qualifying times, we're also not adjusting like the projection. So if someone drives really, really well, has faster than expected times in practice or qualifying, that's not going to be incorporated into the sim. It'll be incorporated kind of as we parse through that data moving forward. We're kind of like including that in the model, but it's not like, oh, this driver's doing really well. Clearly the car is faster. Let's bake that in. Other than, like I said, however, you know, the Vegas lines, how those would be accounting for those factors. So, you know, it is important to keep in mind that Vegas is a factor. So you always want to, you don't want to necessarily overaccount something. If like
right.
someone has a really good qualifying run and then you see that their odds of winning, you know, go way up or way down, whatever, you know, we don't, then clearly like the Vegas lines are taking that into account. And so you don't necessarily want to then add even more to their projection if we're already sort of, you know, incorporating that. So that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. I mean,
and then I think,
oh, go ahead.
Just the other thing is the kind of teams and manufacturers, we're not, you know, it's very difficult to kind of track, especially with new seasons, like Ford versus Toyota or whatever. Like it's hard to know for sure how those manufacturers are going, like how the differences between them. And so that's something that you could potentially add some value by researching there.
Yeah. And I think, and you hit on it, I think the most important thing to note there from a practical standpoint is I always recommend people start off with a test build just to see how things are looking and build 150. I mean, you can build it with the advanced plan up to 1500 lineups and just get an idea of kind of who the model's already high on, so that you avoid, you know, if there's a driver that's practiced really well, that's qualified well, there's good buzz for this driver already coming out ahead of the race. You don't necessarily need to go in and bump that driver up if the, you know, the Vegas odds are already kind of representative of that driver's ability to win the race. I think it's worth something that Dan Kingfish Nato mentioned when he was on here last week is to kind of keep an eye too on the narratives of the practices and the qualifiers, that certain drivers are going to have an incentive to push their car a little bit more. Maybe they want to test a new car out or something like that going into the race. Other drivers are just going to sit back and not really have like a big incentive to drive hard in practices. So to keep that in mind, you know, that not necessarily a great performance on the practices and the qualifiers is always means that driver's projection needs to get boosted up. So.
Yeah. One other thing that I want to mention is ownership is a good thing to look at. You know, our ownership model is still kind of in early stages. It's largely based on sort of our projections. And so I think if you dialing that in can help a lot, because especially for these, you know, there's only 40 drivers in the field. You're picking six of them. There are going to be a lot of duplicates. If you look at, you know, the Millie Maker last week and other contests, there are a lot of duplicates. And so you want to be maybe spend a little bit more time on kind of dialing in your ownership and like in step three, looking at your exposures and maybe taking, you know, I don't think you need to take super strong stands with players because you're getting a lot of edge with the lineup construction, but that is just another way that you can sort of add value is in like, oh, well this, you know, maybe this driver is going to be higher owned than I think I want to, or than SaberSim says, and I want to adjust that and make sure I'm, you know, maybe fading him a little bit because there's so much variance and because being unique is really important.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I think on that, it's worth maybe talking just briefly about the ownership fade slider, and maybe you can kind of maybe give a quick background on what this actually does. And, you know, for NASCAR, would you recommend maybe bumping this up a little bit or on a specific contest type? I know by default here, and there was a question about sliders too, so I guess we can get into that. But would the sliders by default, I think, for most of the contests at the moment are 0-10, which again is just going to give you those single race optimals, which I think are super valuable. Is there any situation where you would just straight up recommend bumping the ownership fade slider up, even potentially bringing this invariant slider down maybe for a smaller contest, anything like that?
Yeah. You know, the ownership fade is interesting. We wanted to start that at zero because, it's a brand new model and we don't want, we want to make sure that the lineups, like you're getting kind of the edge out of the actual sims, in your lineups. I think there's reason that you could bump up the ownership fade. I think for me, the reason that I don't necessarily like doing that when you have 10 sim variants is because once you incorporate that ownership fade, the lineups you're getting are no longer necessarily the like true optimals from each sim. So whereas if you have zero ownership, like each lineup, you know, is like, this is the optimal for the sim. If you bump it up, it's like, well, maybe this is like the second or third best optimal because we're fading one of the high owned drivers that ends up doing really well. But you know, I think it's still viable to do that. Because, you know, the ownership fade slider does kind of incorporate like the variance of the players. And, you know, obviously for a huge contest like a Million Maker, you do want to make sure that you're incorporating ownership. I personally like to do a lot of that in step three, where I run the build with no ownership and then I'm looking at the projected ownership and my own exposures, and I'm kind of making personal decisions to adjust for the risk. You know, making sure either I'm not too far over on like really chalky drivers that might crash, like Hamlin, who did crash, or maybe getting a little bit more exposure to low-owned drivers or whatever. I think for ownership, it's kind of a personal decision. I wouldn't bump it too far up, but I think you could do a few ticks and just know that, yeah, maybe you're not getting like the perfect optimal for each sim, but like they're still going to be viable lineups, and they're probably going to be, you know, more unique and higher upside. For the sim variants, I think you can bump that down for smaller contests, certainly for cash lineups, you'd want to bump it down. Or if you're just doing like, you know, multipliers are kind of smaller where there's not as much need to get first place. You just need to get top 10% and you can profit. I think you can bump it down, but if you're playing in these in like a big contest with, you know, upwards of 10 to 50,000 entrants or more, I would definitely keep it at 10.
Gotcha. Yeah, it makes sense. And again, I think it's kind of satisfying almost to know that when you have that, when you're building on 0-10, which is what I did last week as well, I'll probably do that again this week, is that anything that you're editing here in step three, even if you want to take a really aggressive stand on a chalky driver, maybe you had the crystal ball that you knew Hamlin was going to crash, you can just rebuild your portfolio of lineups and know that you're still going to be playing, in this case, 50 optimal lineups that are optimal just in a case where Hamlin's not.
Yeah.
And again, you have kind of figured out, we don't have to sit here and think, okay, what are the potential outcomes for this race when Hamlin fails or crashes or fails to reach the optimal? Those race scripts are already kind of written here, and we're just sorting through them.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I guess on that note, since we've kind of been talking about Hamlin, and again, we're talking about a race that already happened here. Is there anything that we found in building this out, that would allow us to kind of predict wrecks or predict when drivers are going to crash? Or I guess even a better question is any of that built into the model as it is?
Yeah. So we do predict wrecks, for Daytona, it was a fairly simple way of doing so, fairly flat rate based on kind of how Daytona goes, but it wasn't differentiating too much based on each driver. That is one of the main things that we're going to be improving on in future iterations of the model that we're the guys are working on right now is improving how we do recs, because you know the two main factors for that are driver skill and starting position. So you know, the more cars you have to pass, the more likely you are to crash. Mm-hmm. And the worse of a driver you are, the more likely you are to crash, or the worse car you have. So that's definitely something that we are working on actively, and probably even for this upcoming week, we'll have some improvements there. So, you know, I think it is already incorporated into the sim. And so when you do these high variants, I mean, if you looked at all 1500 lineups, you know, even these drivers that have huge value, like really, really well projected, if they're going to not be in, you know, more than 50% of, or even 20% of the lineups, because there's all these simulations where they crash. And you can see that when you opened the distribution before, you can see it's this bimodal distribution where there's like two different, well, I guess that one isn't as much, but in some of these, or most of them, I would say, yeah, you can see that like there's this peak on the left where basically like those are the crashes on the left, right. And then the rest of them are sort of his normal races. So, you know, you want to really, what you care about for GPP lineups is like the right side of that distribution.
Right.
So if you look at a driver who has maybe an average projection of 40, but a lot of sims like on the left side of that distribution, you don't really care about those. They impact the average projection, but they don't matter much. Like if someone in your lineup crashes, you're basically toast regardless.
Right.
So you're kind of going for like, okay, when they do, when they don't crash, when they do well, this is the, like what the distribution looks like. And like, actually, if you click on Villeneuve's mm-hmm. distribution again, it is really interesting. I know we were talking about this before. He's so interesting and doesn't have that bimodal curve because he's starting in the very, very last mm-hmm. spot. And so every other driver, if they crash and place dead last, they could get negative points. He's like the only driver that can't get negative points because like that finish position category can't be negative. He can only go up, but because he's not a good driver, he's very, very unlikely to win. And so you end up with like, he's kind of a really bad GPP play, even though he's the top value on the slate. He's not a good GPP play. I mean, he might be in the optimal, but his upside is so limited because, yeah, like he'll probably get some place differential points. Maybe he starts 40th and finishes 30th. So mm-hmm. he gains 10 places. He gets some points from that. And that's what you see in the middle of this like 20 to 30 to 40 range. But he's very, very unlikely to get top five. And so I think it's just really interesting to kind of look at that curve compared to someone that starts that either compared to either someone that starts at the back but is a good driver like Hamlin, or someone that is a good driver and starts at the front like I think Larson was, or someone, I can't remember who, but yeah. It's really interesting. I think it's fun to just sort of open these distributions and look at them. Yeah, and so you can see Larson's like that left side of the curve is all literally negative points. So he could get negative 10, negative 20, or I don't know how the scoring is, but you know, it's a really different curve than Villeneuve. And Larson has a little bit of limited upside in terms of not being able to get the place differential points, but if he dominates the whole race and wins, right. he'll very likely be in the optimal. And that's what the very right side of that is like those races where he's just dominating the whole way. The rest of it, like kind of the median outcomes are sort of, he does well and he probably places in the top 10. He's not going to score great, but he'll be fine. So yeah, anyway, I think it's really fun to just like look at the distributions and see like, okay, this is how these outcomes can go. This is why I'm seeing these exposures, even though like Villeneuve is the top value driver. This is why I'm not getting a ton of him in my lineups.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's a unique sport here too, where the distribution of a driver varies so significantly around where they start in the race. And there's not really a lot of other sports that work like that, where there's this level of kind of diversity. I mean, you can literally go through, I was doing the same thing of checking different drivers that start in different finish positions and see how that affects what their distribution looks like. And it all just goes to show really, you know, how unvaluable these average projections are. Like, we just looked at two kind of case studies here of the best average projection value play on the entire slate was Villeneuve, who clearly possesses very little upside in the race. And that's reflected in the distributions here. And then on the other hand, Kyle Larson, who starts at first, has a very poor average projection, a traditional tool without kind of forcing Larson to you would give you almost none of him, has a ton of upside here, or has some upside in the event that he dominates and wins the race. So, I would highly recommend anybody, you know, really as part of the research process. And I think this is unique. I wouldn't necessarily say this so much about other sports, but I mean, do you think it could actually be a valuable research process to look at some of these distributions of drivers that you're getting a lot of exposure to or little exposure to, if maybe you're confused by that result as you're preparing for a slate?
Yeah, I think especially if you're in the step three process and you're tinkering with exposures, which I think that's a really valuable, that's a place where you can add a lot of value, is adjusting exposures in step three. And if you're not sure, like, okay, you know, I'm seeing I don't have much exposure to Villeneuve or whatever, looking at that distribution and seeing, yeah, this is why, this is the upside. Maybe you still want to bump them up or maybe you don't, but it is good. You know, a lot of it is a little bit of common sense. Like, especially if you know NASCAR, you've played NASCAR DFS, you kind of know, like, yeah, good drivers that start at the back are going to be good plays, guys right. like Hamlin. But then, you know, if you like look at Hamlin's distribution, there's still like a lot of, there's a high crash chance and he ended up crashing. And so I think it's a good way, especially to think about whether you should limit your exposure to someone. If you have 100% of Hamlin, if you open his distribution and you see like, okay, yeah, there are all these outcomes where he will ruin my lineups. If you're comfortable with that and you're like, look, yeah, if he crashes, I'm not going to make any money. I'm going to lose all my money. If you're comfortable with that, that's totally valid to go ham on him.
Right.
No pun intended, but I think it is helpful just as a way of thinking about, you know, how you should make those adjustments. I'm not sure how you would do that objectively, but if you like just tinkering around with exposures and kind of using your gut, which is can be valid, then it's at the very least it's interesting. And you've got a lot of time with NASCAR to build lineups. It's a weekly sport, so I think it's a good process. But for me, I would essentially just sort of trust the sims to do that for me, for the most part. Like, if I run the 0-10 build, then I'm going to generally trust that my exposures are basically mimicking the probabilities of these drivers being, you know, the top plays.
Yeah. And they do, I think, for the most part too. The fact that you mentioned your gut, I think that's actually a really interesting point and something that, you know, I don't even know if we talk about enough, is that because the optimals have already kind of been created for you, we're basically getting a playground of 1500 race optimals here for this particular race. I think you can actually safely go with your gut way more with SaberSim than with other tools, because you're never going to land in a bad spot, right? You're playing right. a different exactly. angle. Even if you took a complete full fade of the chalkiest, best projected driver on the course, you're going to, or not the course, the track, I guess.
Yeah.
You're going to land with 150 or 20 or 50 or one or however many lineups you're playing of a different optimal of the way that the race can just
play. Yeah, I love that approach of, you know, that all the lineups are viable. Mm-hmm. And that's really the value of this tool is like, yeah, all the lineups could win. So you can take stands and be aggressive if you want with your exposures. And, you know, you'll still end up with lineups that have a chance at winning. You know, I think on the other side of the coin, something that I know some people do and I've done is go the other way and say, okay, I don't really want to take huge stands. I basically want to like match ownership or come very close to matching ownership, but trust that the edge I get from lineup construction is going to be enough. And so I limit my risk by sort of getting very close to the field and overall ownership of players, but knowing like, okay, each lineup I build is going to be one that has upside. And so I can have that edge of like having good lineup, better lineup construction than everyone else because other people aren't using a simulation based lineup builder. But then, you know, I'm not going to like completely lose everything because I'll be basically matching the field in ownership. So I think those are two like valid strategies. It sort of depends on your risk tolerance and, mm-hmm. you know, what you want to do. But
well, I think the field hasn't really caught up to that yet. Whereas, you know, in football, there's so much information out there that, you know, you can, I mean, practically walk into an article telling you to stack your QB and your wide receiver together now. And in baseball, right, there's a lot of stacking. I really don't think that the field has caught up to the roster construction component of NASCAR. And some mm-hmm. of that is because so many of the other tools out there require so much work from the user to get these kinds of lineups in them.
Right. And so you end up creating, you know, these heuristics. Mm-hmm. So you'll create these groups and these rules that get you close, I think, to what is ideal for NASCAR lineups, but it's not going to get you all the way there, and you're missing a lot of nuance where maybe you're preventing a 5% outcome. It's like, yeah, I don't want two drivers that are starting in the top 10 in my lineup, for example. I don't know if that's a real rule, but that seems like something that mm-hmm. someone might do.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, maybe that outcome only happens 5% of the time, mm-hmm. but rather than full fading it, why don't you just have 5% of that type of lineup? And that's not something you can really do easily with rules, but that's something that will happen more naturally when you use a simulation based builder where it's like, yeah, most of them are not going to have a bunch of guys in the top 10, but maybe there's a couple because that can happen in a race, and you want your exposures to somewhat match like the probability of those outcomes happening. So I think it's just a lot harder to build rules that give you that lineup construction compared to a sport like MLB where it's like, yeah, there's nuance there, but you can just do a 5-3 stack and right. get most of the correlation. There's not you're not losing as much with like setting rules in a sport like MLB or NFL where it's like, okay, QB plus two in a run back. But for NASCAR, it's just really difficult to address that nuance of the correlations and variance and lineup construction without a simulation-based builder.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a couple other things that I had noticed just while we were kind of talking here, and then I think maybe we'll start to hit some questions because I see quite a few questions coming in. For some of these drivers, I know we had mentioned that we have kind of a bimodal distribution. For some mm-hmm. of these guys, it's almost like this trimodal lip here that happens. Yeah. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on kind of what that is. It does seem to me to be a little bit more focused on better drivers, better overall projected drivers, but I'm curious.
I think that is basically like winning the gotcha. Race. So like you get points from place differential. So I just pulled up the scoring just to remind myself. So it's like you get 1 point for each place differential. So taking Hamlin, or right, was that who you had brought up?
Yeah, any of these top guys, they all kind of have.
Yeah, so he starts near the back of the pack. Mm-hmm. So if he wins, he gets like 30 plus points from place differential and 45 points from first. The other thing would be fastest laps and laps led too. So there's a lot of correlation between winning and getting and like dominating, what they call dominators. People mm-hmm. that have played this for a while is basically drivers that like get a ton of fastest laps and laps led. So I think there were like what 400 laps in Daytona. And so, you know, you get about half a point for each fastest lap, a quarter point for each laps led. So if you like really dominate the race, that's a ton of points that you're getting from that. And then if you're dominating the race, you're also likely to win. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those points kind of add up. So I think what you're seeing in that very right hand is basically like those dominator races, because there's that correlation between winning and getting the fastest laps and laps led. So like all of these kind of in the middle, I think, are where he does well. He doesn't necessarily dominate, but like he's going to get, 30 points from place differential, and maybe another 30 to 40 points from being in the top 10. And so that puts him at 60 to 70. And that's like right where those bars are. So right. Like those 60 to 70 are basically like he starts 30 something and he ends top 10, and he doesn't dominate. The very right hand side is dominating, the left hand side is crashes. That's how I would basically explain that graph. And so the reason worse drivers don't get that very right hand curve is because they're almost surely not going to dominate the race.
Gotcha. Yeah, it is really cool to look
and it's at. 200 laps, by the way, not 400.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Dan, when I was talking to him last week, like mentioned that Daytona is not really going to be a race that's as dominator driven, and you can almost see that here, right?
These
exist, but it's not right. A significant portion. It's not necessarily why you might want to go and roster one driver or the other. So
yeah, and that's actually on that note, I want to bring up that one of the big improvements we're making to the model is improving the way that laps led and finish position the way that laps led and fastest laps are impacted by the race and by the track. Mm-hmm. So for Daytona, there's a lot more lead changes, and so it's less likely that one or two drivers is going to completely dominate. Mm-hmm. So there's let me look. Eric actually sent the numbers. So in Daytona, I think there's like a 17% chance in each lap that the leader will change, something like that. And in other races, it's like 8%.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not sure those are totally right, but it's something like that where basically like for certain races and tracks, it's a lot more likely to get lead changes every lap. So those dominator points are going to be harder to get. And so that is going to, again, change the lineup construction. So that's something that this week we're incorporating into the model. It wasn't, it was somewhat in Daytona, but I think it'll be a lot. It'll really improve the model going forward.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, what else do we have planned for the NASCAR model as we move forward? I guess both kind of in the shorter term, but maybe the long-term support as well for the Sims.
Yeah. Sorry. Just give me one second. I think my headphones just ran out.
No problem. And I see everybody. I see everybody's questions coming in here. So we will. I promise we will get everybody's questions here. Yeah.
Are we back now?
Yep. I got you.
Cool. Sorry about that. So kind of moving forward, like I said, how the track impacts the fastest laps and laps led. The other thing we want to improve on is kind of taking, like I said, we do incorporate Vegas fairly heavily, and we want to do a better job of extrapolating, kind of combining our internal projections with Vegas odds and kind of extrapolating like, okay, we have all of these probabilities of winning, of each driver winning, but like, mm-hmm. how does that correspond to each driver's probability of getting fifth place or 10th place or 12th place or whatever, or last, because, there's not as much nuance in the Vegas odds, and we want to kind of learn how to make sure that we're still following Vegas a bit, but extrapolating that out in an accurate way. And then we do want to look a bit more at correlations and how like dominators are correlated, and it's built into the sim, but measuring that better would be good. And then I think just a lot of the factors that like we talked about earlier that you can, as a user, you can incorporate, like the pit crew skill and the track, how the track type impacts specific drivers and practice and qualifying times, like anything like that that we know impacts but isn't in the sim, we would like to incorporate into the sim.
Right.
And then the last thing, which is sort of a long-term goal, is to have a lap by lap sim. So right now we're sort of, we're just simulating like each race, but we really want to go really even more nuanced and like, how hard is it to pass each driver? And how does like, you know, if we can kind of simulate each lap by lap rather than sort of just the race in general, it would really, I think, I think it's already really good, but that would just be the next level up. That's probably more like a next season type thing. But, you know, these are all the things that we're thinking about in terms of how to improve the model moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I a couple just quick questions on stuff you mentioned there. You had mentioned that correlation is already kind of baked into the sim. Can you maybe just expand on that just a little so people kind of understand what you mean?
Yeah. So correlation is baked into the sim because of the sim variance setting. Mm-hmm. So when you are using sims to build the lineups, like each lineup, if you, in theory, this would never happen, but in theory, if you had a situation where, like, you know, if one driver wins, this other driver is going to score terribly, then if you built with 10 sim variants, you would never get those drivers together. Obviously, that's an unrealistic situation, but you know, those would have very negative correlations. And even without having a correlation slider, you're still incorporating that because you're using the real sim outcomes. So that's when you look at like the default settings for showdown slates, for example, in NBA or MLB, we usually have zero correlation set. And that's because it's already baked into the sim variance. And what really matters isn't the average correlation in all the sims, it's the correlation in individual sims. And that's why we say like those correlation numbers are helpful and they're unique and definitely a value add from SaberSim, but they're similar to average projections. Correlations are a number that is summarizing the thousands of sims.
Right.
And this, it's just one number summarizing a relationship between two drivers or players or whatever. But it's not capturing the nuance of, I mean, you saw those distributions, they're like kind of all over the place. And just like that, correlations are not just a linear like number, they're a complicated kind of relationship between these performances that is best, I think, incorporated in the sims. That said, we are planning on building the correlations into the app, just like we have for other sports, so that you can click on a driver, see the correlations with other drivers, and have a correlation weight slider if you want to use that in the builder in addition to the sim variance. So that is coming, but you know, I think we still are using it even if it's not directly like using those average correlation numbers.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, I think the example with showdown is perfect. That's exactly what I was kind of thinking there. Okay, I want to spend a little bit of time here. I see there's a bunch of questions that have come in, so I want to jump into some of these. We'll start with a couple questions here from Tanner, and I think we kind of covered this a little bit here, but I think good to reiterate. He asked, how do practice times affect the projections, and then also how does driver fit to the track taken into consideration?
Yeah, so I mean, the short answer is those are two factors. They aren't taken into consideration other than how they impact Vegas odds.
Right.
So, you know, insofar as they do change the Vegas odds, I'm not sure how much those lines move based on, you know, I haven't looked closely into like the line movement for Vegas odds. And obviously like the starting position makes a big impact, but say, you know, it's more just about like the times, like you can probably get edge betting those lines. So if you can get edge betting the lines, then you can get edge adjusting projections in SaberSim for, you know, accounting for those things. So yeah, basically they're not really accounted for, and that's a good way to add value.
Yeah. And I think the one thing too that I'll add is on these kinds of things, you can, at least I like to think about it a little bit as playing a bit of a game theory angle here too. Like if there is a driver that maybe doesn't project well, doesn't look like he's going to be very chalky, but then practiced really well, or based on your research, you feel like he's got a good fit to the track, like something that maybe even Vegas hasn't really picked up on, you stand to gain so much by rostering that driver because his ownership is going to be low. And vice versa, you know, if you've got a really chalky guy that maybe there's some buzz that, you know, he's having issues with the car or whatever in practices or whatever, you stand to gain so much from a leverage standpoint from fading there. that's a lot of times with these things where there's like a little bit of uncertainty, a little bit hard to quantify these things. I like to think about it that way is, you know, you don't, there's only so much positive leverage you can get on a driver that's already going to be rostered at 60%. And if yeah, he practiced well and he's a perfect fit to the track, like everybody already knows that, everybody's already rostering him. You don't stand to gain that much. So, anyway, let's keep it going here. A question from Phantom. And I think this is another one that we've covered a little bit here, but a really good question and just something that I want to hammer home. He said, with traditional optimizers, you'd frequently want to do groups of stack the back like Daytona last week, or in more traditional races, groups of dominators, etc. Would it be good to do the same with SaberSim as well, or run a research build to ID potential dominators depending on how often they show up? Just broadly speaking, any need you think to do groups or anything like that here?
I don't think there's a need. You can, obviously, you know, we have the groups functionality now. I think it's, you're not going to lose a ton of value by doing groups like that. But, you know, like I was just saying, you know, what you get from this unique builder is with the sim variants is those groups are essentially like built into the lineups you're getting. So, you don't really need to add all of those rules and that logic to the builder because we're essentially doing it for you. I think doing like a research build to ID, you know, potential dominators or just look at lineup construction and see kind of what the sim is saying. Mm-hmm. I think that can be helpful. And if you want to build some groups accordingly, like, I don't know, I guess it's hard because it's not something that I would do because I, you know, having, being very involved in the sim, I didn't exactly build this one myself, but I trust it completely and I'd like trust sims. So I would just like run it with the sim variants at 10 and I'm not going to worry too much about the groups because I know that each sim is like, there's only going to be one dominator or, you know, one or two dominators, whatever. There's only going to be one driver that gets first place. Like I know that the points are distributed correctly in the sims. And so you're not going to get lineups that are impossible to like be good. So, but if you want to play it more safe, I think it's reasonable to do that where maybe you want to create groups that more like limit risk. And so you don't want to have like a bunch of bad drivers that are starting at the back in your lineup, or you don't want, or maybe you just don't want like three drivers from the top five or 10 in your lineup, just because like there is risk there. If like one of them does badly, then you're kind of screwed. So I think it's, for me, it'd be more about like risk management. Mm-hmm. But you know, again, I think the sims really do it for you, but it's a preference thing. If you want to have that control, you can.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too, you said it earlier, is not only are the sims going to be building you just like optimals that make sense for the race, but the strange lineups you might see or things that maybe are a little bit outside of the conventional wisdom are only going to show up at the rate at which those events happen in the simulations themselves. Like if you're getting on a race where maybe you traditionally want to stack the back, I know I had just like a couple lineups where maybe there were like two guys inside the top 15 in that lineup. And it wasn't something that came up often, but it would be something that, you know, somebody might group out for themselves with the traditional tool and was still a lineup that had upside that is represented by an optimal there.
Yeah. I think it is like, I mentioned it before, but it's just good to remember that just like you might want 2% of a player in NBA that like probably won't do well, but maybe they'll have a really good game and they'll be in the Bink lineup. You might want 2% exposure to some weird lineup construction. And yeah, when you completely eliminate them, you're removing that from the equation entirely. If you rely on the builder a bit more, like you might have a small amount of exposure to a low probability outcome. And you know, low probability outcomes are how you win exactly a lot of money. Right.
Okay, cool. So we have one here from Kurt, and he said, do you expect better or worse model accuracy for different tracks? Please be as specific as possible in your answer. And thank you in advance for your advice.
Thank you, Kurt. I don't think I can be too specific, sorry. But I mean, I would say the more data that we have on a track, the better the model will do. So if it's like a brand new track, then it's probably going to be not as accurate. Probably no one's going to be as accurate in that case, mm-hmm. but you know, that's where you might want to do more research. If it's like, you know, Daytona, which is kind of a well-known race, and I think it'll be better. I mean, in terms of accuracy, like the more variance there is, the less accurate it will be. So tracks that have more crashes and more variance are going to be harder to predict. That doesn't necessarily mean there's less edge, but there's less accuracy. But yeah, I mean, I don't have a specific answer in terms of like different tracks, whether they're going to be more accurate. I can, you know, talk to the guys to see if they have any opinions there. But I think it's mostly just kind of how much data we have on it.
Gotcha. And this one, I think we've also covered pretty well here, but again, worth reiterating. Kenny just asked what are the best settings for NASCAR? And I think maybe we probably can both agree that at least as a starting point, just using those 0-10 mm-hmm. optimals, not setting any groups, anything like that to get started is going to put you in a good spot. Anything you wanted to add there on settings or sliders?
Yeah. I mean, those are the settings I would use. You know, again, if you're playing small contests or cash, I mean, I probably wouldn't recommend doing cash games for Daytona or for NASCAR, but I have no idea. Maybe there's edge there, you know, then lower the sim variance, or if you just kind of want safer lineups that maybe have less upside, then, you know, you can lower the sim variance, or if you want to be more aggressive with your ownership, then increase ownership fade. But I would say in terms of the best, like if you're not sure what to do, then just stick with the default.
Yeah. And I think one way I always like to think about the sliders is, or maybe an alternative way of thinking about the sliders is, what do we need to do to get an edge in this sport for this contest type? And the 0-10 sliders are just so indicative of the fact that there's such a huge edge to be had from the roster construction, from using optimals that fit a certain race outcome, that's it. And that fits. I mean, if you're playing, I even think on smaller, if you were playing, you know, smaller three maxes, I would still recommend doing that. Because it's such a high variance sport, there's not really any reason to overemphasize average projections by bringing down the sim variance slider.
Right. Yeah. And again, like the goal, like the reason to have that sim variance at 10 is to get the best lineup possible in a contest. Mm-hmm. But if you don't need the best lineup possible, then you don't need to have sim variance at 10. So, you know, I think the contest size is probably the biggest impact there. But like for me, even if it's a small contest, if you use sim variance at 10 but you build 1500 lineups, like maybe you sort by projection after, and so you know, right, like this is the best projected, you know, lineup that still could be the optimal, you know, in one of the sims. So that's kind of a way to maybe be more risk averse, or just like you want to incorporate the projection, but you still want that good lineup construction. But yeah, that's just my last thoughts in there.
Yeah, no, I actually think that would even be better. Like if you were playing smaller fields and wanted to get a little closer to average, I think it would be sharper to build at 0-10 and sort by projected score rather than bringing down the sim variance. So
yeah.
Okay, question from Iteru here. Let me read this one. This one's a little bit longer here. Let's take a look. He said, do you mind going more in depth with how you aggregate these multiple simulation outcomes and create lineups from that? Okay. If sim variance is not set to max, but maybe if sim variance is set to 8 or 9, you said you're averaging results of individual drivers of a subset of simulations. Is that all, or do you take steps to preserve covariance? That is what I'm most interested in, even more so for other sports, with more covariance between players.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, So we're taking the same simulations from each player. So say you have sim variance at 8, I think at that setting we use like 6 to 10 sims in the bucket. So, taking NASCAR, still being on NASCAR, say like in those 6 sims, you know, you have Hamlin, getting top 10 in 3 of them and crashing in 3 of them. He, like in those simulations, the other driver, we're taking the same sims for each driver. And so like in the ones where he crashes, someone else will take his spot, and or you know, maybe he gets first in three and crashes in three to make it even more extreme. So like someone else will get first in the three that he crashes, and when he gets first, those other drivers won't get first. And so we are still incorporating the covariance between players, even when you have sim variance below 10. It's just that it's incorporating more more simulations in each one. So I, I'll often use baseball MLB as an example with this, because it's kind of the sport that I started with. And I think it makes sense where it's like, if you are taking a bin of like three simulations and, you know, Mike Trout hits a home run in two of them, the opposing pitcher is going to have a much lower projection in that like bucket, because he gave up home runs in like two of those sims.
Right.
So you might end up with Mike Trout has like 6 or 10 more average points in that bucket, and the opposing pitcher has 5 fewer average points. So you still have that correlation between the players, but there's just a little bit less randomness to it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Great question. That was educational for me as well here. Don asks a good question. Kind of in summary here, he says it feels like the maximum amount of value add would be in modifying the exposures. Is that a correct assumption?
I think it depends on who you are. For me, certainly.
Yeah.
If you're a NASCAR expert and you feel like you really understand the sport, you like follow it closely, you know whose car is running well and whose isn't, you know like how they're doing in each course, or you just do a ton of research and you feel like you have a really good sense of like what can be added to the projections, or if you're like betting, you know, you're betting outrights and you feel like there's value there, you know, I think you can add value in step one that way. For someone that doesn't know too much about NASCAR, or even if someone that knows a little bit, you can adjust exposures that way. And for me, like in any sport, I always feel like the best value add is in limiting risk. And so for me, it's all about looking at my exposure versus the ownership, looking at that leverage and kind of managing risk that way, or, you know, maybe eliminating just like really weird lineups or weird exposures. For NASCAR, I don't know that much, so I'm not going to do too much of like eliminating stuff that seems weird, because I don't really know what's weird, and I'm just going to trust that the sims know what they're doing. But like for last week, I kind of adjusted some exposure, maximum exposures, just to get a little bit closer to the field and some drivers. I didn't want to be overexposed to, someone like Hamlin, who's like high owned and high projected, but like, you know, there's still the downside. So my goal last week was just to get pretty close to the field. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good value add in terms of just like limiting your exposures that way.
Yeah, I always think adjustments in step three, especially for people that are new to a sport or even just new to SaberSim, are always the best place to start. I do think there are some opportunities to adjust projections here as you get more familiar with the sport and with the app overall. We mentioned a couple of those here on stream. I think the big thing to just remember is that, you know, it's not necessarily so much about identifying what driver maybe is in a good spot for one reason or another because he practiced well or because he fits the track well, but it's rather what is a driver that's in a good spot that isn't already being taken into account, or vice versa. What's a driver that isn't projecting well or isn't in a good spot for this race that isn't already captured in the simulations? And I think that's where the most, if you're going to start dabbling more in editing projections in step one, I think the most important thing I'd recommend you to do first is to just run that test build without any adjustments to see where things stand, so you avoid a situation where you're double counting different factors.
Yeah.
Cool. And then one other question here I see for us, another really good one, one we haven't really talked about at all yet. Yo, I got this said, knowing generally how a driver's range of outcomes looks, any substance to using a higher percentile on step three? Have you messed around with the percentiles at all here?
No, so they actually don't, I I believe that we don't have it set up. There might be a for percentile, but I don't think it actually changes the projections at all. If you change that, you could like download the projections and then upload a different percentile.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's similar to other sports where like that's being incorporated by the sim variance, because if you're using the sims, then the lineups are already looking at upside. But, you know, if you're doing that like 0-10 build and then you're sorting by projection, but you still want to have some upside, like maybe you can upload like the different percentile and then you're kind of sorting by ceiling instead of sorting by projection. But I think it's interesting to look at the percentiles in step one, just as like a research thing, but I wouldn't necessarily like build using them.
Yeah, they're already captured so well in the sim variants. I think they are, I always say on office hours and other things here that I think the percentiles, exactly as you said, are most interesting for research rather than like making a core part of your process for every slate or anything like that. So
yeah.
Cool. That is all the questions we have here. I'll go ahead and kind of start to summarize, I guess, and wrap us up. So, I mean, hopefully that you guys are able to tell here now why simulations are so crucial in NASCAR. And it's because average projections alone are not predictive of upside with this high variance, kind of volatile distributions of different drivers. And most importantly, they don't tell the stories of the different race outcomes that you need to build optimal high upside lineups. And our new NASCAR simulations give you access to these valuable optimals for thousands of different simulations of the race. And what this really lets you do is it saves you the time and avoids you making costly mistakes of trying to figure out all of this for yourself and then trying to figure out how to program a traditional optimizer optimizing for average projections on your own, which lets you, opens you up really to have the time and energy even to add value to your process by doing research, but also managing risk or finding leverage in your lineup portfolio. If you are interested in learning more about NASCAR DFS strategy, I'd recommend checking out my interview with Dan Kingfish Nato from the SaberSim community. That's up on our YouTube channel. That was up from last week. And also stay tuned for our official How to Beat NASCAR DFS guide that will probably drop later this week. I'll be putting that out up on our YouTube channel. The last note I'll make here is that if you are not a SaberSim member, you do not have to take me and Matt's word for any of this. We offer a free, no strings attached trial at sabersim.com. You can come in, check us out for a free week, play NASCAR DFS for trucks, Xfinity, and the cup races, and you'll get access to all of our other sports as well, NBA, NHL, esports, golf, all of which we have simulations for. So, before we wrap up here, I will just say, if you have any other questions after watching this, you can always email us at support@sabersim.com. We'd be happy to help out. Before we shut it down, Matt, anything else that you wanted to add on? Any last notes?
I think the only last one is if just keep in mind, if you're playing the Xfinity and trucks, that there's the qualifying races start very soon, like the same day as the actual race. So you know, we're not going to get projections up until qualifying finishes. And so there's like a little bit of a time factor there. So just keep that in mind. I think for the normal cup races, it's like the night before. So just keep in mind, this isn't like, you know, NFL where we're just going to have projections like days beforehand. It's still going to be, you know, we're not going to have projections up until like we get the qualifying. So, you know, it's a different sport. You got to get used to it. But yeah, I think we went over a lot. So
yeah. That was fun. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye. See ya.